And of course, Linda Moulton Howe with us. I get so many emails from people about loud booms everywhere. And Linda's going to concentrate on that with a few of her stories when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Loud booms, Linda, they continue. It's strange stuff, isn't it?
It is, and it is persistent, and it has been intense this year. And if we go back 2 years ago in May 2013, after I had produced over 50 Earth Files reports since 2011 about mysterious booms, metallic and trumpet sounds, a whistleblower surfaced. I received an email from a retired electronics expert who had worked for Hill Air Force Base Contractors in Utah. There, he came to know a geophysicist working on military contracts for the U.S. Air Force. The geophysicist, through him to me, said he wanted me to know the mysterious booms were becoming more frequent and intense around the world because he was measuring it, and, quote, something was going on in the inner core of the Earth. They did not know if it is a magnetic pole change that involves restructuring of minerals within the mantle and core. They don't know if it's a regular occurrence that happens in cycles on the Earth, meaning booms coming in cycles related to something in the Earth's core, or if it's a short-term, one-time boom phenomena or something very serious. They really have no idea what is going on, close quote. The geophysicist used the analogy of the Earth's crust acting like a large speaker diaphragm, projecting sounds through the mantle to the Earth's surface where some infrasound frequencies were going up through the atmosphere, hitting the ionosphere, and bouncing back as audible sounds to humans. The infrasound bounced back, he said, could be as tightly focused as a single house, which was another one of the mysteries. Dogs and other animals can hear infrasound, and that would explain why dogs have been reported running scared even before humans have heard a loud boom. He said the bright white flashes of light seen with loud booms were like a very large static electric discharge he associated with data that they had of huge, sudden, unpredictable energy releases deep in the mantle. But why and how big could the boom effect be or become, he did not know. The May 2013 whistleblower and intermediary disappeared after only a few weeks. And now, this year recently, I received more information from a corporation owner in the southeastern United States who, like the 2013 whistleblower, has asked for anonymity. I know the corporation and have established that the corporation owner is real and is the person talking to me. His field of expertise is in fossil fuel research and recovery. That is why he has studied the Earth's crust, mantle, outer, and inner cores. I will call him James Smith. Mr. Smith thinks the Hill Air Force Base geophysicist was telling the truth about Earth core changes that can link to the boom phenomenon. He says there is evidence that the extreme pressures and temperatures in the Earth's core create a different form of iron crystal lattice that is called hexagonal close-packed iron. He hypothesizes that the HCP iron is what allows the inner core to spin so independently from the outer core and the rest of the planet. Further, he thinks Earth core changes are causing the Earth's magnetic field to keep fluctuating, as confirmed in 2014 by swarm satellite data. The Earth's magnetic field could be fluctuating because the Earth's north and south pole magnetic fields may be finally getting ready to flip north to south and south to north sometime this century for the first time in 786,000 years. Here now is corporate owner James Smith.
And what is happening worldwide, the series of large metallic sounds and horn sounds and the booms and the kinetic energy coming up through people's feet when they hear an explosion outside, all that began to pique my curiosity.
You now have a hypothesis that could explain how some kind of thrust from below hitting the bottoms of people's shoes and sidewalks and some kind of air compression from above coming down and slapping the roofs of houses could be related to Earth core changes.
Absolutely. My focus solidified from what you've done over the last 4 years. Earth has a solid inner core, and that inner core is actually rotating at a different speed than the rest of the Earth. According to Columbia University's studies, spinning faster than the planet itself. In fact, in April 2005, Scientific American had its highlight article on the Earth dynamo theory, and that is that the Earth is basically an electrical generator. Later on, the RAND organization published a series of studies that showed that the inner core, the solid core inside the Earth, is a ball made up of 95% iron and 5% nickel. But there's one particular interesting characteristic of this iron that relates to some of the exotic materials research we did in our lab. That is a material which is configured in a lattice known as hexagonal close pack. What the RAND organization study showed was that the core of the Earth consists of hexagonal close pack iron. This type of iron is like the Navy SEAL of iron. It's extraordinarily energy packed. It's extraordinarily compact, and it's not the natural state of iron that we see. If you see a chunk of raw iron ore on the Earth, that is a different crystal lattice from this exotic form of hexagonal close-packed iron. In fact, at the Earth's core, it's compressed to anywhere from 330 to 360 gigapascals, which is an extraordinary amount of compression, and is heated to about 5,400 degrees Kelvin, which is an extraordinary amount of heat. In our materials research in our lab, what we found was that hexagonal close-pack lattices have an aversion to binding or creating friction with other forms of lattice. So to a degree, there is this boundary between the inner core and the rest of the Earth, and it is called a Bullen discontinuity. And what our research showed in our lab was that this discontinuity actually consists of an infinite lubricant. In other words, the hexagonal close-pack atoms that are in the core, they won't bond with anything else. This allows the core to rotate faster than the outer portion of the Earth.
One of your sentences here in the paper that you sent me, quote, "It is like a diamond to some degree spinning inside an incredibly efficient lubricant. And even though it is made up of iron and nickel atoms, they no longer bear attachment allegiances to the iron and the nickel atoms in the mantle."
That's correct.
Do I have the correct image of a sphere of 95% iron, 5% nickel spinning at the very center of the Earth?
That is correct. So we have the challenge that exists inside the solid core of the Earth that it will not be a perfect polished sphere. It will have some jagged edges that stick out naturally as part of its lattice structure. Now, normally they can spin and not necessarily lose their integrity, in other words, not slough off of the core itself. However, if enough kinetic energy of some form is placed into the core, then the core, in theory, can slough off these hexagonal close-packed solid pieces of iron and pass their energy out into the outer core. And that's the key principle that we conjectured here. When the inner solid core, if in theory it sloughs off this hexagonal close-packed solid iron, so the outer core takes the energy and the iron contribution from the inner core and then ejects material up into the upper and lower magma segments of the Earth. An enormously high energetic state of iron is passed into the outer core from the inner core.
Mm-hmm.
Because the outer core is eutectic and it keeps its balance, it must pass some of that metal contribution to the lower mantle. This process creates what are called convection currents. Pass this hot material up and toward the surface of the Earth into the lower and the upper mantle. But something happens here. Hexagonal close-pack iron hits the critical threshold at about 2,900 kilometers deep and about 125 pascals, where it suddenly, in a moment, as it moves further toward the surface and drop in temperature and pressure, it snaps from a hexagonal close-packed configuration in the interior of the Earth into a face-centered cubic configuration, a more classic form of iron. When it does that snap, it releases an enormous amount of potential energy that is bound up in that lattice matrix. And that energy comes in three forms: acoustic energy, thermal energy, and electrical energy. Acoustic energy, if you've known anybody that's been in Hawaii and had lava pouring across the highway or even in their backyard in some cases, if you run in your house and get a hammer and you run out and you pound on that lava, it still sounds like you're pounding a hammer on a railroad track. It maintains the acoustic characteristics of metal, even though it's in molten form. The same thing occurs in the inner and outer mantle. The acoustic energy that is released by this conversion of hexagonal close-packed to face-centered cubic lattice array is enormous.
Please explain what the sound conduit is from a snapping in the core in that change of iron configuration at the atomic level to it translating as compression waves on the top of roofs to something slapping the bottoms of feet.
Yes, the hexagonal close-pack lattice suddenly expands into a face-centered cubic lattice because of the drop in temperature and pressure. That latent potential energy releases as acoustic energy, thermal energy, and electrical energy. But it's that acoustic energy and the electrical energy that I think we're seeing on the surface of the Earth with the case of metal scraping sounds, booms, lightning bolts, and clear sky weather. Those are the things that are consistent with this sudden release of potential energy. But how they convect and convey to the surface of the Earth is different in this upper layer of magma. In magma, we've seen measurements consistently from lava eruptions, anywhere from 10 to 40% of silicon dioxide and magnesium oxides. The key here is that the upper magma layers of the Earth are at about the temperature of 1100 to 1600 degrees Celsius. Silicon dioxide melts at 1600 degrees Celsius, so it's solid in these upper layers. Magnesium oxide melts at 2850 degrees Celsius. So these solid chunks of silicon dioxide and magnesium oxide are floating around in the upper magma, somewhat akin to Rocky Road ice cream. The sound will channel in between these hard pieces of the upper mantle. These silicon dioxide chunks, these magnesium oxide chunks will convect, channel these acoustic energy releases from the hexagonal close-pack. And that way we can have one boom if it releases right at that transition point and can convect to the surface and hit Connecticut and simultaneously hit London, but make no noise anywhere in between. And likewise, the electrical energy that is released can follow similar pathways. The silicon dioxide and magnesium oxide crystals are somewhat counterconductive. So electrical discharges will take pathways in between these hard chunks in the Rocky Road ice cream and will, in similar fashion, perform a strike of electrical energy or what's perceived as a lightning bolt in the upper atmosphere at various places.
Crystal magnesium oxide and silicon dioxide would resonate with the slap sound from the core?
Yes, resonate. It may create chambers much akin to the chambers in a guitar, or it may provide channels through like a waveguide through which the sound will take one single pathway to the surface of the Earth, much like a snap of electricity on your finger when you touch a doorknob on a cold fall day.
I understand the Rocky Road concept of having these crystals spread around through the upper mantle into the lower crust. But I do not understand how, even if they are resonating with a slap sound at the core of the Earth 4,000 miles below our feet, how those crystals would emanate sound that would be heard by a lot of people as coming from above their head, and a lot of other people have felt the vibration, the slaps in the bottom of their feet, and even a garage door was knocked out of its tracks.
Yes, the dynamic of sound, once it erupts through the surface of the Earth, it may well hit the upper atmosphere or the ionosphere or a certain layer that is frequency sensitive to that frequency of sound and then reflect back down. That is one nature of what is called thermal channeling with regard to sound. With Navy submarines, when you ping, you take active sonar, and then strike one ping of sound from the sonar. That sound will take certain channels through the ocean, depending on the temperature and the layering in the ocean at that time. Some sound may only go about 2 miles. Other sound may project out 12 miles. And I think this channeling occurs in our atmosphere as well. So when these booms erupt through the surface of the Earth, they can go up and then channel through the upper layers of the atmosphere or the lower layers. And then the first town that is in that channel will hear that boom. But any town that is not in that thermal channel will not hear a thing.
The infrasound might go up as high as the ionosphere and bounce back.
Oh, absolutely. Anything that is matter can convey sound. So the crust is not where it stops. It keeps going to the sky. It may change its form a little bit. It may channel differently. However, the acoustic energy is definitely still there, and it can impact humans, birds, cetaceans, any form of life.
So now we are midway through his hypothesis, and we are going to continue this in the next half hour, but I would like to remind everybody of a quote from Professor Arianna Gleason at Stanford University. She is a geophysicist there that I took the original 2013 whistleblower's statement that we could be dealing with infrasound that could bounce, could go up to the ionosphere and bounce back. Was that even possible? Because it originated with this geophysicist from Hill Air Force Base. And here's what she told me that you heard on Coast to Coast 2 years ago. Quote, "The Earth at depth is a very mysterious place. When the geophysicist is saying that infrasound frequency goes from the core, transmits through the mantle to the crust, is able to exit that, get all the way up to the ionosphere, and perhaps get reflected back down, if these frequencies are very low, there could be something to this," close quote. That was 2 years ago, reinforcing then. This man is going farther with this strange, which is true. The more you research it, you find that the iron at the core under this extreme temperature and pressure at the very center, 4,000 miles below our feet right now, is in a different molecular atomic structure. And that there might be something leading up to pole shifts in which what is happening, that the pole shift happens because of something that happens in the Earth's core. We don't know the chicken and the egg, which comes first and why, but there are ingredients that are beginning to come together here that 2 years later, after first introducing this from a whistleblower, I now have this person who's very knowledgeable from the kind of work that he does, and he is fascinated with this and is presenting this hypothesis about the core, the channeling up through crystals that don't melt in the mantle to the crust of sound that can go up as infrasound and bounce back. And that I think, even though this is a hypothesis and it's not proved, that we are living in such a time of extraordinary high strangeness, it seems like now almost every day, that we need to consider some of this that we haven't heard about before.
We're going to come back in a moment and have Linda wrap up the boom show, and then we'll take calls next hour. Well, next hour, we call it Conversations with Linda. We take your phone calls, questions, but if you're a whistleblower, we definitely want you to check in with us to give her some leads on the story that she might be able to pursue. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you along with Linda Moulton Howe. And Linda has her final segment coming up about all these rumblings and boom songs. Go ahead, Linda.
As mysterious as Enceladus and Ceres and the rest of the solar system is the core of our own planet Earth. We can't get there. It is truly mysterious. And here is a fact, George. You may not have ever heard this before, but it is true. The solid core, the inner core at the center of this planet Earth, is 1,520 miles in diameter. That's a solid metal ball of iron with a little nickel. And that size is 70% the diameter of Earth's moon. And it's spinning inside of our planet right now, 4,000 miles below our feet. That spinning iron ball, 70% the size of the moon, is surrounded by an outer shell of liquid iron. And the combination of the spinning iron ball inside the liquid iron shell is what creates the dynamo and the magnetic fields of the Earth. Beyond those inner and outer iron cores is the mantle. It's very hot rock. It's not liquid, it's hot rock. And all of this is heated by radioactive elements, and the mantle extends 1,800 miles from the core toward the surface of the Earth. And then the crust upon which we live is like the rind of an orange that ranges in thickness from about 5 miles to 25 miles. And that hot rock mantle can rise into the crust and then erupt as more liquid lava in surface volcanoes. Those are the links from that spinning core, the outer liquid core, the mantle, and the crust that we live on top of. Now, scientists recently discovered that the Earth's inner core is around 10,800 degrees Fahrenheit. And George, that is as hot as the surface of the sun.
Wow.
So we have almost a moon-sized object that is as hot as the surface of the sun at the center of this planet. 80% of the Earth's inner core heat comes from radioactive decay. They've been looking for radioactive elements on Enceladus to explain the heat there, and they haven't been successful, and it may be a different answer, but here on this planet, we know it's radioactive decay. Well, the European Space Agency swarm satellite measurements of the Earth's magnetic field that's generated by this dynamo at the center of the Earth. And they did measurements between January and June 2014 and showed that there had been a dramatic decline in the magnetic field over North and South America, while the magnetic field strengthened over the southern Indian Ocean. And if in 2015 the magnetic field continues to decline where it is getting weaker, it truly might be a signal that the north and south magnetic poles might actually flip at some point in this 21st century. And further, on February 5th, 2015, the Lamont Doherty Earth Observatory at Columbia University published a report with data that shows seafloor volcano activity over the centuries also relates to the Earth's history of pole changes. And James Smith, he thinks that we could see maybe more below the surface on the seafloor volcano activity increasing again if, in fact, these Earth core changes are going to continue to keep persisting into this century further. And he continues now with his hypothesis.
The Lamont Doherty Earth Observatory published an article February 5th, 2015, and data showed that strikingly regular patterns in seafloor volcano cycle activity relate historically to Earth's impending magnetic pole flip.
So this is reinforcing the idea that has been presented by some geophysicists recently that we might be in the century in which the magnetic fields of this planet will change. The north will be in the Antarctic and the south will be in the Arctic.
Yes, it's a possibility. In fact, Gary Glatzmeyer at the University of California, Santa Cruz, and Paul Roberts at UCLA said that a flip could happen, not only from the statistics, and if you look at the statistics, the last pole flip happened 780,000 years ago. That's well beyond one standard deviation of the average period in which our poles flip. So we're long overdue, if you look at it that way, for a pole flip.
So from your point of view, the boom phenomena that seriously began in a modern age from 2011 to 2015, now and ongoing, this change in the Earth's core could be the beginning of what could happen the end of this century, the change of the magnetic field poles on this planet.
I believe so. We are compelled to look at that alternative. I think we're seeing something in our oil studies, in our geological studies, in our mines. We're seeing different characteristics with regard to the behavior of magnetic fields in the earth. And of course, the sounds highlighted in the media.
It's my understanding that when there is a magnetic field change, as happened 786,000 years ago, it is because the north-south orientations of the iron atoms suddenly begins to rebel against the whole planetary magnetic field orientation. And as all of the atoms start switching their north-south in some mysterious way, the whole planet will change. What is the relationship between the iron atoms suddenly changing their north-south orientation and that relationship to what is happening inside of the core that we have described as the hexagonal form of iron?
My supposition is that the magnetic moment, that anomaly, some impetus causes only the magnetic field itself to flip over. It's just that the south and north poles switched mathematically between the two. So from a physical standpoint, I don't think it's that significant an issue. But what it does to life on Earth and the electrical flow on the surface of the Earth, that I don't know. But it is key here that we see a diminishing of the strength of the magnetic North Pole. We see a wandering in its location. And that hints to me that we're losing some of the integrity in that crystal lattice in that solid core. One thing we have seen, and this comes from E.R. Williams, a study published in 1992 in Science magazine, he found that the Schumann resonance is so precisely linked to global temperatures.
And the Schumann resonance is?
Schumann resonance is the resonance between layers of the upper atmosphere, the sprites that we see from the space station, electrical strikes at high altitudes. It's a low-frequency vibration that resonates really with the electrical field generated by the solid core of the Earth.
That could go to the heart again of why changes in the Earth's core could manifest themselves in the atmosphere and below ground as booms, metallic scrapings, and trumpet sounds. Do you think it is possible, if your hypothesis is correct, that the Hill Air Force Base whistleblower to me in the spring of 2013 could be right, that the Defense Department is very concerned about the implications of what is happening in the Earth's core and what might happen in Yellowstone and in Juan de Fuca?
I think there would be, and there should be, some concern. If we're delivering that much kinetic energy from the inner core to the outer rotational body of the Earth, and those three forms of energy are indeed correct, then the ramifications will be weather changes. There will be booms. There will be heating of the surface. All kinds of Earth changes will be attributable to that, as well as subcrust magma movement. Now, what those would do, I don't know. I don't know if that would precipitate, say, a supervolcano eruption, say, at Yellowstone or anything like that.
That whistleblower came through an intermediary to me a couple of years ago saying that he had been studying as a geophysicist changes in the Earth's core and the mantle for the Department of Defense since the end of the 1990s, and that when he heard me reporting about the booms, the metallic scraping sounds, and even the trumpet sounds, that he wanted me to know that this, he thought, related to Earth core changes that could relate to magnetic poles changing, and that we do not know the last pole change, what happened to Earth life.
If the government is beginning to see patterns which might suggest this type of disruptive activity occurring in the Earth's core and then other dynamics which erupt from that, then they're going to go about doing the science. And until they can prove the case, they really have a duty to not say anything to the positive or negative until they're able to establish solid scientific proof or acceptance that such phenomena are going to occur, and then the ramifications which could come from such phenomena, they really have a duty to not say anything, and that's a scientific principle. But the bottom line is, once they determine this, they don't own the information. It is public domain.
What could the U.S. government have done in tests so far that they might know a lot about these booms, metallic scrapings, and trumpet sounds in relationship to geophysical studies of the Earth's core?
Well, I think the first place the government would have been alerted to this type of phenomena would be acoustic sonobuoy returns, and then submarine observations, submarines reporting back geophysical events as they're required to do. That would have been the first point at which they begin to detect globally some type of odd phenomena occurring.
So it could be both audible coming up out of the various crystalline structures, but it could also be that infrasound going up to the ionosphere that I reported about 2 years ago, that it was a distinct possibility that that could also explain why some of these loud booming sounds could be as narrow as a single house on a block.
Absolutely. If you think of static electricity jumping off your finger to a doorknob, that's one very small location in which an enormous amount of energy relative to, you know, the ambient energy is released. The similar principle can occur underneath the current Earth's crust, where a channel appears much like a waveguide or the body of a guitar, and that acoustic energy channels up and to focus on one single point in between two bodies of magnesium or silicon oxide structures.
If the United States government is trying to confirm what is happening at the Earth's core in relationship to all the booms, metallic scraping sounds, and trumpets, what kind of technology would they have to have placed around the planet since the end of the 1990s, as the geophysicist whistleblower said in Utah?
The sound surveillance system, the SOSUSnet, is what the U.S. uses to track Russian and Chinese submarine movements. That SOSUSnet measures a broad array of frequencies because the challenge that's involved in picking up the signature of a submarine or a ship exists at really all acoustic frequencies. So these are not narrowband receivers. The SOSUSnet measures down into the extra low frequency acoustic range and will naturally pick up these sounds. Magma displacement is a very common classification of a sonar contact in the Navy. So these magma displacements, if they see an increase in this type of activity in the SOSUSnet and then the reports coming back from attack and boomer submarines, then we know that there's some activity occurring, and they're going to hopefully bring that to the top minds, the top scientists and geophysicists who study this issue.
So, George, this is sort of, I think, presented tonight because I think this is important. I think that there is something going on in the planet, and the fact that local authorities in so many cities and states have been going out to investigate booms, explosive booms, sure, and they can't find any answers.
It's everywhere.
That's right. And because if you look at the maps that I have at earthfiles.com, my news website, and you see just how many places there have been since January, and that there's not a day that goes by that I'm not hearing from someone, and I would greatly appreciate hearing from the coast-to-coast audience and Earth Files viewers, from people, especially multiple eyewitnesses, because at least it strengthens a little bit the eyewitness testimony. And incidents where the local media or social media have also reported. And that what I'm interested in are those incidents where there are a lot of people, a lot of reports, local authorities are brought out to investigate, and there's no seismic activity, there are no planes breaking the sound barrier, there's no meteor colliding, there's no weather systems, and that has been the strangeness in these cases, one by one, that they can't come up with an answer. And if people listening can help me, email me at earthfiles@earthfiles.com. Think of a reporter who files news about the Earth. So it's earthfiles@earthfiles.com. My news website is www.earthfiles.com, and the Earth Files Facebook link is right there at the headlines page, and I have been finding tremendous value in the Earth Files Facebook people who are keeping me apprised of so many of both the boom phenomena and other mysteries in their areas, it's becoming a very valuable crossroads for me to learn about things. So if you would go to Earth Files Facebook or Earth Files at earthfiles.com and look at the reports tonight at earthfiles.com, there is a tremendous amount of array in images and when it comes to the Earth, of learning about what a planet we are on. And so when I look at a file sitting next to me, George, it's about 2 inches high, and it is filled with reports that have been sent to me from around just in the last 4 weeks or so. Port Angeles residents rattled by mysterious loud booms. They source unknown. They, Ron Cameron, chief criminal deputy for the Clallam County Sheriff's Office, said, quote, "We're not finding anything." The next, "What's that noise?" Washington residents rattled by mysterious booms. Mysterious booms fill the skies over central North Texas. These are all have occurred within about a week of each other. Mystery booms reported by the Mariposa Gazette in Nevada. It goes on, and the very fact that are these many reports and this much phenomena, and that the government remains silent. We're not hearing anything from Homeland Security. We're not hearing anything from the Department of Defense. We're not hearing anything from anybody at the federal level. Meanwhile, in all of these towns and cities, people are, over wide areas, Georgia had 5 counties reported all at the same time hearing loud booms, and there was somebody there that was the place where there was a garage door that was literally boomed, bounced out of its track. 5 counties, that's a big area. And then just a couple of weeks ago, went from North Carolina all the way up to New Jersey. And so this is not going away. There has to be a reason. If it is geophysical and it's related to the fact that this planet is undergoing some kind of a change in the core that it has done in the past, but not for a long time, and that it is related to what happens before the magnetic poles shift, we could be at the beginning of something that will play out for the rest of the 21st century.
Is the planet in danger of imploding?
No. The number of pole changes in something like 84 million years is like 114.
That's a lot. Linda, stay with us. Much more to come when we come back. Phone calls with you, conversations with Linda.